On our morning show today from WRCO, we have a real treat. A good friend of ours, Steve Wolk, is in the studio with us, longtime healthcare worker in the area, physician's assistant. And Steve, good to have you in the studio.
Thank you, Phil. Nice to be here. Like I said, this is the first time I've ever been on the radio, ever been interviewed. So I'm trusting that you will hold my hand and lead the way.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Just like I've trusted in you a few times over the years, you
Thank
know.
You.
Yep.
Thank you.
Had to go in for a little, you know, you could put me in a body cast, but if I couldn't talk, that was a problem. So
that
I had
was
to go
a problem. That was a problem. So we'd have to just say, Phil, say ah, and we'll see what's going on back your throat.
All yeah, right.
You seem to have done okay that way.
We're doing all right. So 40 years in the healthcare field. Does it seem like it's been that long?
No, it doesn't. But I can honestly say, there's some wonderful people that see me on the street or see me on a sidewalk in Richland Center in Spring Green. They say, do you remember when you did this or that for me? And I'll say, I remember the person. I remember doing the best I could for him. But the specifics of what we exactly did on a given situation, I don't really say I can remember, but then I just sort of play along with them and they'll describe it and they'll go, oh yeah, I remember that. And
kind of a blur.
Yeah. And I'll say, I'm glad you're doing well. So we must have done something right for you way back then.
So were all 40 years spent in this area, Steve, or were you elsewhere before
this?
No.
Well, it's kind of a long story. So I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and did my medical training at a college called St. Louis University. And finished that program. The end of that training was called a preceptorship, and that preceptorship had rotation sites all around the United States. And since I was single at the time, I had the liberty to just pretty much go where I was interested in going. So I finished my training on the Crow Indian Reservation in Montana, southwestern Montana, southeastern Montana. So I spent the summer there. And that's where I met Martine. And Martine was a floor nurse. She was a nurse at the Crow Indian Hospital in Crow Agency, Montana. I completed my training there and was offered my first position as a PA in an adjacent town just on the edge of the reservation called Hardin, Montana. And that's where I started my career. And I worked there for 2 years, and I had the luxury of working with four excellent physicians, and I was the PA in a county, Bighorn County, Montana, had about 15,000 people, which was roughly, I think, about the same population as Richland County, except Bighorn County was like four times as big. Bighorn County was as big as some small states back east. But we were the only practice in that hole for all those people. And in those days, we all worked side by side. So I was basically had the opportunity to like do a mini residency where I went through my training in school, which was a 3-year program. But in those days, I worked with these four doctors. And I took call from 8 a.m. Saturday morning to 8 a.m. Sunday morning, the ER, every weekend. So I got a lot of experience, a lot of good training. And Martine, while I was doing all that, decided to go get her master's degree as a family nurse practitioner in Kentucky. So she went off to Kentucky. I was still working in Montana. And then when she finished her training, we had a decision to make of where we wanted to start our life together. She wanted to stay out west because she loved the mountains, she loved to ski, and I wanted to get a little bit closer back to the Midwest to be near my family down in St. Louis. And she said, okay, she'll go to the Midwest if we could move someplace that has snow. So I said, okay. So we kind of looked at Minnesota and Wisconsin, and I found a job in Madison, actually, back in 1986 and worked in St. Mary's for a while. Martine finished her training from the University of Kentucky, moved up here, and one Saturday morning, all I can remember is we were reading either the State Journal or Cap Times newspaper, and she opened it up, and there was a one ad from Richland Medical Center from Dr. Barton Cook for a nurse practitioner. And she said she gave them a phone call, like in the old days, came out here for an interview, and got hired. And then 2 years later, I was offered, Martine did a very good job. She was an excellent nurse practitioner. And I was given an offer to join this practice here. So I actually started here in 1988. So basically, I had roughly about 5 years of work and experience before I started in Richland Center at different places. So of the 40 years, about 35 have been here, either in Richland Center or Spring Green.
And you were my neighbor in Little Willow.
And I was, I commuted Interstate Little Willow.
Yes.
For many years. And I can remember, the story of how I became your neighbor is that when we first moved here, I lived up on Crow Hill. And there was the old Crow Hill schoolhouse where we rented for a couple of years. So we were we're in Crow Hill above the old clinic building and the Golf Quail Run golf course. We lived there for 2 years. And then one weekend day, I used to love to bicycle and I still do. Somehow I got riding up that valley in of Little Willow. And there was a for sale sign at that place. And I wrote the number down and I called, got to meet Don and Lucille. And we must have passed the interview because they offered us the opportunity to move in there and buy that place. And then we also got to meet Mr. Gilly Moe and Mr. Eldon Moore. And those gentlemen were part of the township organization.
Town board.
And they invited us over for coffee also to see who we were. And we were able to become part of the community out there. But I found that by bicycling up the valley one day.
Yeah, isn't that something?
And then, you know, once we were living there and working in the Richland Medical Center, there were quite a few days where I had to make the decision in the wintertime if I wanted to go down Quarry Hill or over Stibby Hill, right? Because if you go over Stibby Hill, then you have to drive 5x14, which cars are going fast. But if you go down Quarry Hill, I remember the first time with my four-wheel drive pickup truck in a wintertime, looking down Quarry Hill thinking, okay, this is going to be interesting. Is my truck going to make this or not? But once I got the hang of it, then we did, and I did, and so that's how we got to become your neighbor up there.
Yeah, yeah. It's been rewarding work for you, I'm sure, over the years, hasn't it?
Oh, I wouldn't. It's been a blessing, and I have no regrets. I was able to work with some excellent physicians here in Richland Center. My generation of doctors, Dr. Smith and Barton, Cook and Richardson, were superb. And then I was fortunate enough to the first nursing station I worked at down in the basement of the old building was with Dr. Dick Edwards.
Okay.
And Janet Babbitt was the nurse practitioner with that group, and Connie Dunn was the medical assistant with Sue Davis. So, yeah, it was a fun group, but also very committed and excellent care. So,
yeah, longtime doctors too. You know, we were very fortunate in our area to have doctors that stayed here for a long time.
Yeah, you look at that whole group; and they spent their whole careers here.
Right.
I don't know why people seem more transient now and move around more. Richland Center could not have been a better place for me and Martine to just by good fortune land, because we had our children here at the Richland Hospital. Then as they got a little bit older, we were lucky enough for them to start their schooling at Ithaca. You may remember that. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about some of the teachers that had good impacts on my kids. We remember both kids had Mrs. Cindy Milliken in kindergarten, and then Mrs. Mary Walton was like a first or second grade teacher. Unfortunately, she passed away young. But those teachers both had influences on both kids. And then Martine and I were both full-time, you know, healthcare providers, so we relied on the after-school care and the daycare, and June took care of Marie at least 1 year.
Yes, she did.
And then I remember the kids, when they got a little bit older, they could take the bus up to Annette Lewis's daycare for like 4 or 5 years. So, and those were both safe, excellent, good environments for the kids. So we're very happy to be out there in the school. And then thinking about when my kids were young, they spent their summers with the Sharks team, the Simon Sharks,
right.
And Denise Hanold. And that great experience with all the parents, and it was kind of a cooperative effort of all the parents putting together those swim meets and, you know, the potlucks and everything we had. And then Jesse was fortunate enough, beginning as a little kid with T-ball with Bear Valley Baseball.
Oh, yeah.
And then Ithaca Baseball. And both Ron and Barb Granger were his coach. And then sort of a few years later, Mick Kitch became one of the coaches. And that was an excellent group of little boy baseball players, because Jesse played with that team even after we moved to Spring Green up through eighth grade. And they won their league in eighth grade. If you remember, those kids and that group of boys in high school went on to win state. So,
yeah,
really good influences from a coaching standpoint, and the adults that those both Marie and Jesse got to.
Mm-hmm. Good community.
So it was great. And
I had to wonder too with Martine, how often did you go home and compare notes? You know, I saw this, and what do you think? And
well, to be honest with you, Martine does that to this very day. She, you know, processes her work day and talks about how would I handle a given medical diagnosis or workup or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
When I come home, it's like I just want to, okay, let's walk the dog and maybe turn on the radio or some music or something. And
sure.
But maybe I would talk more about how the day went if something was bugging me and I needed like reassurance or didn't quite know what to do next, stuff like that. But
well, I had to think, is it hard not to take your work home though?
Oh, well, it never ends.
Yeah.
It really never ends in medicine, because, you know, a lot of times you'll see a patient and then you'll order some tests and you're, you know, some of those tests get sent to Madison or, you know, Mayo or wherever they go, and you don't know the result till the next day or a couple of days after that. And then there's some patients you do worry about. You think, God, I hope, you know, we're on the right track. And, you know, you might even want to call them from home that night or the next morning and start, you know. So, yeah, it's not the kind of career where, you know, at 5 p.m. it's like, okay, you know, we're done for the day or the night.
Mm-hmm.
But that's part of the rewards, is that, you know, you're committed to your patient and you do the best you can for them. And then when God willing, things turn out well, you know, you feel good about it.
Right, exactly. Steve Wolk, our guest here on WRC Radio, and he is, you're fully retired now, is that right, Steve?
Fully retired.
Yeah, they tell me when you retire, every night is like Saturday night. I don't know if it is yet.
Well, yeah, it is, you know. It's like, okay, now I gotta just do whatever I want. And the trick is, the last few years, I've actually been getting up at 4 a.m.
Oh.
Because over the years, there's been a lot more computer work to do as far as electronic health records.
Oh, yeah.
So I would try to get up so I could do an hour or two of charting before anyone else shows up at the office. So by the time the staff starts coming in and we start looking at our schedule, who we're going to take care of, I'm ready to go. So I'd get up at 4, do that before the clinic even started, and then go to bed early in the evening, probably something like you. I don't even know what time you have to get up. What time do you have to get up?
Oh, about that time, 3:50 a.m., I think, is when it first goes off.
So when retirement came, I actually did like that schedule because I felt really good sleeping about 7 hours a night. And I thought, well, I'll keep getting up early. But now I'm starting to find out I'm starting to get up at 5, and even this morning I got up at 6. So
reprogramming that a little bit.
Reprogramming, but I still want to do my stretching exercises. And
sure,
the dog likes to go walking early in the morning when the stars are out, before when it's quiet. So yeah, she gets me moving.
Oh, sure. You mentioned you grew up in the St. Louis area, Steve, and you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the 1982 World Series.
Okay. So I thought you were going to ask me about that, because I think I told you I was there.
You were in St. Louis at the games.
Yes, I was. Uh-huh. I was there in person. So a little background that I think you could appreciate is that the Cardinals for St. Louis is equivalent to what the Packers mean to Wisconsin. It's a community thing. It's a cultural thing. It goes back over 100 years. And I can remember growing up with the age of transistor radios.
Sure.
And the Cardinals on the radio, and that was definitely the sound of summertime in St. Louis. And there was a station down there called KMOX. And KMOX was the equivalent of WRCO for the whole city of St. Louis. You'd get up in the morning, there'd be the news. In the wintertime, that's the station you listen to for the school closures.
Okay.
You always got the weather. And it also had all the sports teams year-round. Now, it didn't cover high school sports like you do. In fact, they didn't even really have high school sports too much on the radio. But they had the baseball Cardinals in the summer and football Cardinals in the fall and the Blues in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I grew up listening to the Cardinals on the radio, and my grandparents, it was just part of our family life, was the baseball Cardinals. I went to my first game when I was 10 in a place called Sportsman's Park. Saw that team that went on to beat the Yankees in 1964.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I was in middle school and grade school, they had a program for students that got good grades, and they'd give you free tickets if you, like, got A's and B's. So I got to go to a lot of free games on my own. And then there was a citywide thing called the Redbird Express. And the Redbird Express was the city bus system that would take teenagers pretty much to downtown St. Louis for ball games. And like for $2, you'd get in. And these city buses were just packed with kids. You can imagine how excited we were. We'd go down to the ball game. So I remember in 1966, I saw the first game the Cardinals ever played in Bush Memorial Stadium, which was the new ballpark at that time, against the Atlanta Braves with Henry Aaron and all those good Braves players.
Had recently been in Milwaukee.
Right. They had just moved. I think that was the first year in Atlanta.
Yes.
Okay. So then they moved to Atlanta. And then the 60s were a great decade for the Cardinals. But then they didn't win another pennant until 1982. So that was a big thing for the whole city of St. Louis. And in those days, before computers, the only way you could get tickets was to get in line for the box office. Okay? So my brother and myself and his stepson Brad, the three of us, slept out on the sidewalk that fall, the night before tickets went on sale for that World Series. And we got tickets for game two, six, and seven of that World Series. And we got tickets for the left field bleachers, and we saw three World Series games. So what I can remember about that World Series is that the games I saw in St. Louis were all night games. Game one, I remember probably watching it on TV, but definitely listening on the radio with friends, and the Brewers beat the Cardinals that game one 10-0.
Yeah, it was a thumping.
It was like we thought, oh my goodness, what are we getting into here? We didn't know much about the Brewers because, you know, we were all National League fans, but it was apparent that these guys could really play ball. And then in game number seven, it looked like it was a tight game.
Yeah, I think it went down to the wire.
The Cardinals won 6-3, and the Cardinals were anyway, Andujar had them shut out until the Brewers shut out in the fifth inning, and then the Brewers scored two, but then the Cardinals went ahead and scored six runs. Not quite sure exactly who did what, but the Cardinals won 6-3. And what I can remember, and, you know, I swear this was true, and I don't know how it could have been set up this way, but I remember that the St. Louis Mounted Police went out there with horses, and I must have maybe done it right at the ninth inning, because it was probably apparent the Cardinals were going to win, but they had the Mounted Police all the way around the field to try to prevent the fans from storming the field. Well, as soon as the Cardinals won, it didn't matter. Just all these fans were running down. They had the whole field filled with people that were celebrating. And we had our little stepson. My brother's son was there. So we just stayed in the bleachers and watched the whole thing. But all the fans went down the field. And nowadays, when a player hits a home run, you know, depending on where it is, they'll shoot off fireworks or something. But in those days, it was special if they didn't ever do that. But they shot off all the fireworks. It looked like the 4th of July. The Cardinals won the World Series. Everybody went out. By the time we left the ballpark, there was a whole street party celebration going on in downtown St. Louis. People were actually dancing on top of city buses. But there was no violence or damage or anything. It seemed like a real happy time. And so that's my memory of the World Series. And, you know, you probably know this from being a radio announcer, but Bob Uecker played for the Cardinals.
Yeah, he was on that 64 team
He was on the 64 team. Yeah. And he was the second string catcher behind Tim McCarver. And so Uecker is fondly remembered in St. Louis. And he often gets welcomed back whenever he goes down there. So I was glad to hear him on the radio again yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. It was interesting because you have a different perspective of that. You know, I was in Wausau, Wisconsin, watching on a 12-inch TV, and I was cussing the name of Daryl Porter, who we had traded away a few years before that, wound up in St. Louis, and he was the MVP of the series. You know, and it's like, why did we let him go?
Was he the...
I think he was the MVP.
Could have been, because he was the catcher that year.
Yeah, it goes back.
He was the catcher, and he only played for the Cardinals for a few years, but he played that year. And the other great member of that team in 82 in the 1980s was the manager named Whitey Herzog.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. And he was one of the all-time favorite managers, because he was from that area. He grew up in on the east side, somewhere in Southern Illinois, so he had a connection, community connection down there.
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
And what helped the Brewers on to that, you know, the glory year that they had there was that the trade with St. Louis, too, you know, because that's how they got Vukovic and Raleigh Fingers, I think, and Ted Simmons all came
in. Is that how they all came from?
And one of the guys they traded away was Sixto Lescano, who's one of my favorite.
Yeah.
And he played just for a short time, I think.
And did the Cardinals get Daryl Porter then?
I don't know if it was in that same trade, but it was with Milwaukee somewhere along the way when they got him. So, yeah.
Oh.
Good memory, Steve.
In retrospect, it's kind of like, God, I wish the Brewers could have won it, because I spent much of my baseball fandom up here,
but, absolutely.
Good
stuff.
Before then.
Yes. So you still watch and listen to baseball then. So what are plans for retirement now, Steve? Have you got them all figured out?
Well, I'm going to be doing some traveling. My brother's got some health problems in Texas, so I was just down there about a month ago, and I think I'll be going back down there pretty soon to support him and my family down there. One thing we're going to do is next week, there's going to be another total solar eclipse.
Oh, yes.
And so, believe it or not, 7 years ago, that eclipse went from the state of Washington sort of down towards Florida. And this time the eclipse is going from like Texas up to New England, and both eclipses are crossing in Missouri. So 6-7 years ago there was one in Missouri, and there's going to be another one. And I have dear lifelong friends who have a farm down in southeast Missouri that at the previous one they invited friends and family, had a great big weekend celebration, and they're doing it again next week. So we're going down to southeast Missouri, a little little villages called Altenburg and Wittenberg and Farr, Missouri, which are very beautiful, very rural, just a few miles west of the Mississippi River down there. So Martine and I and a buddy of hers were traveling down there this weekend, and we're going to be back down there again for the eclipse.
All right.
And if you've never seen one, if you ever have a chance, it's sort of a once-in-a-lifetime thing, so it's amazing that these people are getting two of them within 6 years. But that last one was in August of 2017. It was a hot, nasty, humid day in Missouri, and it's always kind of a gamble whether or not you're going to be able to see it, because if it's a cloudy day, you know the lighting will change, but you're not going to get the full effect. And it was sort of the weather forecast that day was for partly cloudy, which, okay, that's always kind of a good day for whatever else you want to do, except if you want to watch an eclipse, right? So the clouds broke, and there we were, and we knew exactly when it was going to happen, at least everybody, you know, we were told when it was going to happen. And the sky gradually dims from a bright blue sky to like a darker blue, and then some of the colors otherwise change just the whole landscape coloring change. It keeps getting darker and dimmer. And then when you get the total solar eclipse, you can take glasses off and look up, and stars came out. It was a nasty, hot, humid day, but during the eclipse, it felt like Wisconsin.
Isn't that something?
The temperature dropped about 10 degrees, and the birds, the way I remember, I think it got quiet. I mean, the birds either stopped singing or some started singing, and everyone was just like... Yeah, some people were cheering, and other people were just like in awe.
Yeah.
And it only lasted about 4 minutes, and then the lighting started coming up. It was like a dimmer switch in a room. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this is a good one, too. Hopefully it's good.
Well, I've heard.
Clear.
I'm almost afraid to look at the weather forecast, but I was just listening to a broadcast on the radio, and some scientist guy who goes to a lot of eclipses says even if it's a gray day, it's overcast, they say it's pretty impressive because it goes from gray to almost completely black, completely dark, and then the lighting will come back up again. So either way, yeah, it should be, we're good, we're going.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you'll still get a thrill either way.
Yeah, it's gonna be all this good old-fashioned German comfort food down there with friends and,
oh boy, put your feet up.
Absolutely.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the air with us, Steve, and great to have you along here. And
thanks
for all you've done for the community and your loyalty to the area, Richland Medical Center and Spring Green area through the years.
Well, thank you, Phil. I feel the same way about you, actually, for listening to you on the radio and supporting all those kids. And you've done a lot for the community also, and I thank you for what you've done.
Appreciate that. Appreciate you coming in today. Steve Wall, good friend of the studio here at WRCO Radio, now retired physician's assistant.
Thank you, Phil.
The former PA.
Yes, sir.
We can report to you as that.
Yes, sir.
The morning show continues in a moment from WRCO.